It was, well, the 1990s when we first started to see coffee shops begin to pop up in cities around Michigan. Names like Starbucks and Caribou, making cappuccinos and lattes and espresso a part of our everyday lives. Today, specialty coffee shops are caffeinating much of the population of Michigan. Now it seems something similar is happening with yoga studios here in Michigan and nationwide. As one article in the Washington Post put it, to track the economic transformation of Washington, here's a simple rule: follow the yoga mats. How can these yoga studios change the cultural landscape of a city? And are these changes positive, or are longtime residents being kept away from the table? Those questions have drawn the attention of my next guest, Dr. Leslie Kern. She's an assistant professor at Mount Allison University in New Brunswick, Canada. And last year, she published a paper in Science Direct entitled Connecting Embodiment, Emotion, and Gentrification, an Exploration Through the Practice of Yoga in Toronto. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, you bring two perspectives to this conversation. One, as an academician, and second, you are a yoga student.
Yes, that's right. I've been practicing yoga fairly seriously for, I guess, about 4 or 5 years now.
So what have you found in terms of your research and your writing in as far as how yoga is tied to class, privilege, and power?
Well, I think what we've seen that particularly since the mid-1990s, yoga really started to enter the mainstream. It went from being kind of a fringe, new agey practice to being a very mainstream practice and indeed an industry now that people estimate is worth billions and billions of dollars. And as you pointed out in your introduction, we're starting to see yoga studios cropping up, not just in sort of remote retreat locations or far-flung places around the globe, but in everyday neighborhoods. And we're starting to notice that yoga studios are part of a trend of gentrification in many studios. So just as surely as the arrival of a Starbucks might signal gentrification, we now see yoga studios sort of performing the same function.
So before we talk about gentrification, what do you feel is behind this growing interest in yoga and in yoga apparel and yoga stuff? What's behind that?
Well, I think it in many ways connects to larger trends around long-term trends around fitness and health, right? So we're seeing yoga integrated now into mainstream fitness practices. So you don't have to go to a yoga studio to do yoga. You can find it at your local gym. In schools, right, in community centers. So it's very widespread in that sense. But also just a huge kind of marketing push, right? Like with so many things that start out as kind of countercultural, eventually people figure out ways to make money off of it.
Yes.
Everything from the multi-billion dollar clothing industry, right? So the Canadian company Lululemon is worth maybe $9 billion estimated, right?
Yes.
And the signifiers that go along with those particular clothing brands, right? So just as other well-known clothing brands or athletic clothing brands like Nike or Adidas or whatever, Lululemon is now one of those where the little Omega symbol has just as much cachet as the sort of Nike swoosh, right? That signifies your involvement in a particular kind of fitness practice, but also a particular ability to afford those brand name products.
Seeing yoga studios opening in older urban neighborhoods and gentrification, does that freeze out longtime residents?
I think what we're seeing is that there is the possibility for that, right? And it's interesting because yoga, one could argue, is a practice that shouldn't really require almost any equipment at all, just yourself, your body,
and your mindset, right?
And your mindset.
Yeah.
Yet somehow we've managed to commercialize it where, as you say, you could spend $100 on a pair of pants. So you could be in the room wearing hundreds of dollars of clothes, a $100 mat, paying anywhere from $15 to $25 a class for that experience. So in many cases, yoga studios are fairly exclusive spaces. They could be very difficult to access for lower income people. And so the question for me as a gentrification researcher is, are spaces like yoga studios kind of replacing or gradually pushing out less expensive places of social interaction or physical activity or consumption? And I think that I can't particularly blame yoga studios per se for driving that trend, but I think it's clear to say, at least in the neighborhoods that I research, that the kind of low-cost spaces for social contact, everything from diners and donut shops, are disappearing, while the higher-end hip cafes, fitness studios, organic grocery stores, and so on, those things are increasing in numbers in these neighborhoods.
I'm speaking with Dr. Leslie Kern, who's an assistant professor in the Department of Geography and Environment. She's with Mount Allison University in New Brunswick, Canada. It is kind of interesting. There really does seem to be much more so than going into, let's say, a Starbucks. There is quite a connection between yoga and place, because in yoga class, we hear our teachers say things like, feel the earth beneath you, listen to the sounds around you, be here now. Talk to us some more about the connections between yoga and place.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, and one that I started to think about when I was thinking about yoga in cities, because I think we've, in the past, yoga was, as I say, maybe more associated with a kind of retreat location or in a more natural setting, remote settings and so on, where you would have that sense of peace and communion with nature. But when you have a downtown urban yoga studio and thinking about that connection with place, well, the place is a very different kind of place. It's not necessarily a place that we associate with peace and calm and quiet, right? So I think there's a couple of ways we could think about this association between place and yoga in the city. One is that we could think about the way in which yoga students, those of us who practice yoga in cities, can sort of take some of maybe the meditative qualities or the different ways of relating to ourselves, our bodies, to other people out into the city around us, and therefore maybe transform some of the often, I guess, hostile or more tense encounters that we might have with other city dwellers. The other thing that I would think about in terms of that connection sort of goes back to what we were already talking about, is the ways in which yoga studios could work to create communities around yoga practice, around shared interests within the neighborhoods in which they're situated, right? So that they actually become connected to the neighborhood in different ways.
So they have to basically strike that balancing act between coming in to an area, trying to build a business, but strike that balance between keeping the business viable, but not freezing out and shutting out the folks that have made that neighborhood their home for much longer.
That's what I would hope for. That's what I would look for in terms of a yoga studio that I felt comfortable practicing in, would be one that I felt was connected to the community, that understood who lived in the neighborhood, understood different ways to reach out to different groups of people, how to make yoga studios more welcoming. I mean, there's been lots of talk, especially in the sort of blogosphere, if you will, about some of the ways in which yoga can feel quite exclusive to different groups of people, whether that's lesbian and gay communities, people of color, people with disabilities. And so there's a lot of talk about how to make yoga practice itself less exclusive, more welcoming to all sorts of people. And so that's, I think, the kind of a lot of good could come out of having yoga studios in different neighborhoods if they can resist that trend towards exclusivity.
Dr. Leslie Kern, assistant professor in the Department of Geography and Environment. She's with Mount Allison University, and she joined us from New Brunswick, Canada. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure talking to you.